This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our November 8th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as usual, we have one goal on the show, and that is making you an above average investor. And we're here to be a sounding board and a source for answers and information and knowledge to your money questions. Now, our focus, as always, is investing, but we all know our money is tangled up with so many aspects of our lives, and it's hard to really separate investing from things like saving for college and paying for life insurance and just paying for life in general. So you're invited to use our 24-hour listener line for your questions. We can talk live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour, or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll get to those questions in just a moment. Now, our monthly economic forecast went out to our Invest Talk insiders today, and we cover the economy, U.S. and foreign equities, fixed income markets, as well as commodity markets as well. We also do some recommended portfolio weightings for equity sectors, asset classes, and of course, there are economic and market projections for year end as well. Now, this is just one of the informational sources that come your way when you're an InvestTalk insider. It's easy to join, and it is free. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then insider, and you can just click on any one of the pieces and put in your email address, and then you'll become an insider. Now let's open our 24-hour listener line right now and check for your questions. Here's one that came in before today's InvestTalk.
My question is, when someone calls in and asks about a stock, you often talk about your price for that stock, and I wonder what that is. Oftentimes, it's quite a bit higher than what the stock is currently going for, or perhaps lower. And I wonder what is your calculation of your price on the stock? Thank you very much. Enjoy your show.
Well, there's valuing a stock is the holy grail of investing, right? If anybody could absolutely know 100% what the value of the stock is, they would be quadrillionaires. The problem is, it's an art. So we come up with projected values, and a crude way to do it is look at next year's earnings. Say it's $1 a share, and look at the growth rate. Say it's 20%. Multiply those two together, 20 times $1, and you're looking at $20 a share. Now, that's extremely crude. Every industry is very different. Technology stocks are going to trade at higher multiples than commodity stocks, than utility stocks, right? And so there's a lot of ways to value stocks. And if I go back to the finance classes I took in college, you have the dividend discount model. You have a discounted cash flow model. So there's a lot of different ways that you can value a stock. It's not just as straightforward. Now, what we use is very crude, and you have to go, you have to adjust it by certain factors, like management. If management is great, well, you're going to give that valuation maybe a little bit more of a premium, and vice versa. If management has a history of not being shareholder friendly, then, and making good decisions for shareholders, then maybe you're going to give it a little discount. Same with brand. Right? If it's a strong brand and has a wide economic moat because of its technology or brand or size, then you're going to give it a little bit more premium, right? And vice versa. If there's really they have to compete hard and their margins are low and they could be innovated away by a competitor, you're going to definitely discount that price a little bit more. So valuing a stock is certainly an art. It's not a science, but you need to use a lot of numbers and a lot of judgment, qualitative and quantitative as well. Now let's look at our list of topics today. The Vanguard Fund founder comes up with a number for U.S. stock and bond returns for the next decade. So we're going to talk about the expectations for stocks and bonds from a return perspective over the next 10 years. And this is coming from Jack Bogle. He's the founder of Vanguard. Now, that's our main talking point, and I have some others as well. One has to do with short sellers. A lot of people think short sellers are evil, but I'm going to give you a little insight into the thinking behind short selling stocks and why they are actually vital to a functioning market. Third would be three hard decisions about aging you must make before someone does it for you. And this is for anybody who is nearing retirement, in retirement. It always makes sense to start preparing and thinking about various time markers, right? Events in your life as you are in retirement to make sure you age as gracefully and most comfortably as possible. And then lastly, how to buy value in a bull market, an overvalued market. We'll talk a little bit about why valuation matters and some factors that can hopefully give you a sense of how to tilt your portfolio in the way that should be beneficial over the longer term. And then lastly, I do have a question from Donna, who is from Indiana, and she emailed me with a question on a stock, and we're going to get to that a little later as well. Now let's take a look at the market today. We had the Dow up 6, the S&P up 3, the Nasdaq up 21. We were actually down most of the day. I believe small caps closed down or flat or so. We were down most of the day, had a rally near the end of the day, but it was a curious rally because the bond market and the corporate bond market did not do very well. JNK, HYG, two good proxies for corporate bonds, were down about 0.5%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but remember, bonds tend to not move much. So a 0.5% move in the high yield bond market is a pretty decent sell-off. So I always say this, the bond market is always smarter than the stock market. You have to remember, that's almost, to me, if I were to list the top 10 rules as an investor, that would certainly be on the list of the bond market is smarter than the stock market. So you have the corporate bond market selling off. You also have the yield curve flattening, which it means the 2 and the 10, the 2-year treasury and the 10-year treasury are starting to get closer together in yield. And that means a flatter yield curve, which is pricing in a slower economy going forward. So while stocks have held up over the past week or so, you're seeing small cap stocks sell off. Those are, I think, now in a mini downtrend, even though S&P, NASDAQ, Dow, they haven't really reacted yet to the downturn in small cap stocks and in corporate bonds and the flattening yield curve. So these are all things that are very, very important, and underneath the surface, I think you're seeing a little more weakness than maybe the major indexes are letting on. So that's really what happened in the market today, and it was kind of a flat, slightly up day after being down most of the day. Now, financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein, your home may be your biggest asset, and it can also be your biggest question mark. Maybe you've already come to that crossroad where you've debated about whether to downsize or move elsewhere, or maybe renovate your home. If you have a question about that or anything else financial, I'm ready and willing to help you make that decision. 888-99-CHART is our number for any money questions right now on Invest Talk. Let's go to Larry in Temecula. How are you doing, Larry?
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for making
it. I was calling about Expedia, EXPE. I bought it a few days ago after it tanked, and it went down a little bit more, so I'm not down a whole lot, about maybe 4% since I bought it. But where would you go from here? Would you say, you know what, better get out of this, there's better opportunities elsewhere, or do you think might be a rebound?
Well, Expedia, I think everybody knows who Expedia is, provider of airline tickets, hotel rooms, car rentals, vacation packages, and cruise services via Expedia.com, hotels.com. I think they own a couple other websites as well. They yield about 1%, so not a big dividend yield. Operating earnings yield up 3.5%. That's after this big sell-off. So 3.5%, that's okay in this interest rate environment, but that's not very high. You're seeing revenue growth decline, and that is really what the issue here is. A year ago, the fourth quarter of last year, revenues were up 52% year over year. The third quarter of this year, revenues were only up 4%. A year ago, earnings were up 33% year over year. Now, earnings are only up 15% year over year. So this is your classic growth story slowing. And every growth story eventually slows because the market's so big, competition comes in and competes, and that's really what you're seeing right now in the travel space, is that competition is just getting fiercer, so their margins are getting hit a little bit, even though it's still a good company. I think this is going lower, especially if you look how long it's been going up, such a strong bull market over the past 8 years or so, hit a low of around $12 back in 2009, the lows, and now we're at $119. So you're still talking about 1,000% return from that date. And so I could easily see this getting back below $100 a share, maybe even into the 80s or 70s. So this to me is just the start of the downturn, and the market's going to readjust its price multiple for slower growth. And while it's still a great company, they have a strong return on invested capital, return on equity, has been around 20%. Actually, it's now dipped below 10. So there's some weakness there as well. I just don't think it's cheap enough yet. So I would keep it on. I would sell it, but I'd keep it on my watch list, and try to get it below $100 a share. I think that would be a much better price, a lot more right size for its slower growth, and it would at least be a decent value at those levels.
Great, thank you very much for your time and information. I appreciate it.
No problem, Larry. Thanks for calling. Still a great company, just still a little frothy even after the sell-off. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
I own a position in this company. It's called BBX Capital.
BBX.
And the major holding in this company, BBX Capital, is a company called Blue Green, which is a timeshare corporation, timeshare developer corporation. Blue Green recently just announced an IPO. It's going public. So I was wondering, given that I own this company, BBX, and that BBX's major holding is Blue Green, what does that mean? Is that good, bad, neutral for my shares if this Blue Green does go public?
Well, it would just mean, it depends on how well that IPO goes, what's priced at, if it rallies after the listing. Typically, IPOs are very overpriced, and this is going to, in the short term, adjust to that overpriced nature, so that's why it's rallying. I would be wary of it. I don't know enough about it to really tell you whether it's good value or not, but just the optics of it all, of an IPO, the odds are this rally is probably something that's more short-lived than something that is long-term. So I would take at least half of your position off the table after such a big run. Thanks for the call, James. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I want to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go to our main talking point today, which is about return expectations for the overall market and equities and bonds in general. So you have Jack Bogle, who's the founder of Vanguard, talk a little bit with Morningstar, and this is a great article, just kind of get a sense of how he's expecting returns from the market, where they're going to come from, and how much we should expect going forward from our investments. And they start off a little bit with about equities, and he breaks it down pretty simply. He says there's three factors. One is the dividend yield, and currently on the S&P we're right around the 2% mark, right? Right around the 2% mark for the dividend on the S&P. And then you have earnings growth. That's the next factor that you have to consider. And, you know, it's been about 5 or 6% on average recently, but he's expecting a little bit less, maybe 4% or so going forward. So right there you have 2 plus 4, that's 6%. But then there's a third factor, and that's valuation. And valuation on the markets is expensive right now. We've talked about that extensively, about what the valuation is and how it's overvalued. And what he's expecting over the next 10 years is that valuations are going to come back at least to the mean. Now, market's like a pendulum. So while we're in one extreme of the pendulum now, and the median in the market is somewhere in the middle, you're talking about when the pendulum reverses, it's probably going to go past that median, right? So odds are there's going to be a much, much better time to buy equities from a valuation standpoint in the next 3 to 5 years, probably less if you're looking at what the bond market's kind of telling us. And so he thinks that'll shave another about 2%. The valuation adjustment will shave about 2% off returns for the long term, which gets you a 4%. So 4% annualized every year, right? 4% return on your investment from stocks compounded over those 10 years. Now, it's certainly going to be lumpy, and this is what we talk about. People always say, well, how much can you expect from investing with you, KPP? So, well, it depends on the strategy, and certain strategies are, especially ones that are equity-focused, are going to be lumpy. Some years you're going to get 18%, some years you're going to get 2, some years you're going to get negative 8, some years you're going to get 11, others might be 4. But, you know, you're averaging out of the long term from what Bogle expects over the next 10 years, only 4%. And long term, you only get, stocks tend to return about 8 or 9%, which is really good. But that's not after this long bull market, not what you should expect over the next 10 years. Then he moves on to bonds. And bonds are way more straightforward. Why is that? It's because there's a 91% correlation to the long-term return of bonds to today's yields, right? And treasury yields are yielding what? 2%, 2.3 or something like that right now? Very low. And so if you look at maybe 50% of your bonds are U.S. treasuries, 50% are corporate bonds, you're probably averaging out to maybe 3%, which is not far off from what you should expect from stocks over the next 10 years or so. Now, the one positive, because frankly, 3 and 4% returns aren't great returns to be expecting over the next 10 years on average. The positive is that inflation remains low. So your real return, while typically inflation runs in the 3.5% range, it's only at about 1.5% now, and that's probably not going to change too much. So that's the positive, that even though your nominal returns won't be that great, the inflation rate probably will remain low, and your real return will be at least not as bad. It won't have that big drag. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. How are you today?
I'm doing well. What can I do for you?
Yes, I was just wondering what your thoughts on AAOI. It had a run-up. Actually, I was looking at it in the 37, 38 area, but it bumped up today. I think earnings, surpassed earnings, I believe.
My computer just went down on me. So I'm trying to get back on real quick. We're going to go to a break. Let me get my computer back up and I'm going to answer this question for you. Okay. So let me get this back up and I'll answer it after the break. This is Invest Talk. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, we'd like to invite you to sign up for our next wealth webinar, How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market. So if you're looking for income, there's a way to uncover the sources. And if you're looking for value for the long-term investor, Steve and Justin have bargain hunting techniques to share. So here's what you'll learn: how you can tell if a market is over or undervalued, how to find income opportunities, how to create an income portfolio. So join us. It's a live webinar Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. There is no cost. All you do is register, and we'll send you the link to join us live. And because it is live, you can ask your questions anytime during the hour. Sign up now if you'd like on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab and then Webinars. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is Invest Talk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective, where you can talk directly with a registered investment advisor. Bring your questions right now. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Are we going to go back to Art? Okay.
Hello.
Art, you still there?
Yep.
All right. Well, my computer is still booting, but I'm on my iPad and I have a few, a little limited information. But it looks like Applied Optoelectronics is a fiber optic company involved in the telecom industry, correct?
Right.
Okay, and this is certainly a high-flying name. It's gone up a lot. 2016 hit a low of $8 a share. This year, it a high of $100 a share. So in a year, it went up dramatically. And like most stocks that go up that quickly, they tend to fall back to earth rather quickly as well. And it hit a low of in the 30s just recently, and now is up about 15% today, right, to $43.64. Do you own it, looking to buy it? What are you thinking?
Well, actually, I was thinking about purchasing in the upper 30s, like 37, 38. So I was just wondering if it still has some room to run.
Well, if you're looking at a short-term chart, a daily chart, today was a nice reversal day. High volume, I like that. So from a technical perspective, this looks at least strong in the near term. And I would say it looks like it wants to go fill the gap from the recent earnings report in October. And that was around, let's see, it looks like $57 or so. I could see it rallying into that level. You know, it's going to be a volatile name, very, very high risk, as you can tell. You know, any stock that goes from 100 to 30 and change in the span of 4 months is certainly going to be high risk. This is another one of those classic growth names that started to slow. 2 quarters ago, after the end of the first quarter, earnings were up over 1,000%, revenue was up 91%, and then last quarter, earnings were only up 27%, and growth up 184%. And that goes to what we always talk about is growth can still be great, but if expectations were high, stock can easily sell off. And that's what you've been seeing. I'd like to get a little more information if my computer would cooperate with me, but it doesn't seem like it wants to. But it's definitely going to be... Go for it.
Yeah, I think Amazon was probably the reason why it dropped from the... probably close to like 60 down to like 40, because I think they either lost the Amazon contract or they cut back. Mm-hmm. Amazon did. So that's probably the reason.
Now I remember this. Jason, who's one of the advisors in our office, he was talking about this. I think he was talking about Steve, and I heard it in periphery. Sometimes we all three talk. Sometimes it's just two of us. But yeah, this was an issue with this name, is that their their business was super tied to Amazon. So I would really have to dig in to see the dynamics of that relationship, what percentage of their revenues and profits are tied to Amazon, and how easy is it for Amazon to go somewhere else. And the odds are very high, are very good, that if Amazon has a better opportunity somewhere else, they're going to go take it, and they probably do because of their heft. So you odds are really good that a competitor of this company is going to go to Amazon and see what they're doing and maybe try to offer better terms and try to get that business. So this is another one of those factors that is greatly overlooked for a lot of companies, is the concentration of their business on one revenue source. And this is certainly one of those names, and you see the type of risk that is involved when a company who's very tied to one customer loses that customer, or even just the threat of losing that customer can really kill the stock price. So this is a great example of that. So be very wary. I would really need to look into the specifics. Honestly, I would email Jason in our office, or you can just email me and I can forward it to him and have him respond. He's looked into this a little more than I do, because I know he did some research. I believe we owned it for a little bit. I think we got out at a profit, but or maybe a small loss, and because of that issue. And so I would email our office, and I can get you a little more details.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Justin. Have a good day.
No problem. Thanks for calling. 8899-CHART, 8899-24278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's go to one of our talking points today, and that is about short selling. And if you're one of the few people who don't believe the stock market hype, there's a simple trade you can make, and that's as long as you don't mind being hated by a lot of people, because selling short stocks can make a lot of enemies. Really can. And that can be enemies of companies, right? Companies can get mad at short sellers. Other investors who are long the stock, the media can rail against short sellers. Even regulators, when times are tough, they can say they destabilize the market, which happened in 2010 when the SEC came out and kind of railed against short sellers. Now, short selling still remains rather rare, at least in today's market. Of the 453 billion shares outstanding on the NYSE, only 3.7% are sold short. Now, critics of short selling a lot of times believe that betting against something that most people prosper, which stocks going up, is un-American. It's like hoping to see other people fail. And in reality, I think that's totally misguided. And I see them as financial protesters. And they're protesting against overvaluation, high prices. And a market without bears would be like a nation without a free press. Without critics. It would just be giving free rein to the bulls, and who a lot of times are overly optimistic and have false optimism, and false optimism always leads to disaster. False optimism, not optimism in general, false optimism usually leads in disaster, or does lead in disaster eventually at some point. Now, people have to understand that when stock prices decline, it's almost never because short sellers push it down. It's usually because longs are getting out. Because the problems that the short sellers saw early are suddenly coming to light. Now, big short positions also don't guarantee that there will be a sell-off in that particular stock. In July 2014, hedge fund manager Bill Ackman said he was short $1 billion worth of Herbalife because he thought it was a massive fraud. Herbalife shares closed that month at $52.40 a share. Now they're at 65 and change. Now, for those who don't know what short selling is it It's when you borrow the stock, you sell it today in the hopes that it goes down and buy it back in the future at a lower price. Now, there's theoretically, there's higher risk in short selling. And the reason is because when you buy any stock, the downside is zero, right? You can lose all your money, 100%. Well, when you're short selling a stock, theoretically, it can go up infinitely. So you can lose more than 100% of your money. Well, and finally, in reality, short selling is about the opportunity, taking advantage of the opportunity. And sometimes in the market, many times in the market, the opportunity isn't to buy something, it's to sell something. Either the positions you own and you have profits in, or to sell short assets that are overpriced, mispriced, and that you believe will eventually reprice to something more realistic. And you make money on it. So people always think opportunity is buying. What do I buy? What's the opportunities to buy? Well, there's a lot of times opportunities to sell as well. Now, if you're looking for income, there's a way to uncover the sources. And if you're looking for value for the long-term investor, we have bargain hunting techniques to share. Here's what you'll learn on our next Invest Talk Wealth webinar: how you can tell if a market is over or undervalued, how to find income opportunities, both in the stock and fixed income markets, how to create an income portfolio. And this is our Invest Talk Wealth webinar. It's coming up on November 16th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific time to 7:30. It's called How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market. So join us for this live webinar, Thursday, November 16th, like I said, 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. That is a week from tomorrow. So sign up now. It is free on investtalk.com.
If you have a question on our talking point today, there's a link to a related article on our website homepage, or you can put your question in writing. And to do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you.
Let's talk about REIT. Think the timing is right to jump back into a REIT now, or should we wait?
About REITs, well, I like REITs overall. They're not bad investments by any stretch of the imagination. You're kind of blanketing them all together, and I think REITs are a sector of the market that is very, very bifurcated. Might be a good word. There are mortgage REITs that only invest in mortgages, and there's a special type of risk involved with them because they are predicated on interest rates and the movement of interest rates and credit spreads and credit quality in the economy, etc. So it's one of those things where that area of the market, I'm not a big fan of. They have juicy yields, but they're certainly much higher risk. And then you have other areas like retail REITs. Certainly you have disruptions in malls, right? And the ongoing rejiggering of the industry in retail is certainly going to be a risk factor for any REIT that you might be investing in. So that's something to consider. And then you have industrial REITs, you have commercial REITs, you have all types of REITs that have various levels of risk. So to me, you can't lump REITs together. You have to look at individual REITs, the quality of their management, the quality of their properties, quality of the sector of the real estate market that they're investing in as well. So it's not something that I like to just lump in with together and say all REITs are good, all REITs are bad, because they certainly all have their merits, their risks, and their rewards. And one thing you have to consider as well is interest rates. Interest rates rise, that's certainly going to be a headwind to REITs. If interest rates stay low, they go down, that will be a nice little tailwind to REITs as well. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. You have about, 10 minutes left to get your call in. Let's go to an email. This is from Donna from Indiana, and she says that she listens to the podcast. Says, thank you both for all the information you give. She says, I own MDLQ, a preferred stock of MDLY, Medley LLC Management. She says, I've noticed that MDLY has lost almost half its value since early this year and don't really see why. And she asked if that should be a red flag for MDLQ. She says, I love the dividend rate, but don't want high risk. And Medley Management, let's look at what they do. It's an asset management company providing its services mainly to retail and institutional investors. It provides credit-focused investment strategies through various funds and products. So it's kind of a fund manager, and with the indexing craze, this is certainly hurting all kind of active managers in general. And you see their revenue has declined from about $76 million last year to about $68 million trailing 12 months. You have negative cash flow. Let's look at their debt levels. It's pretty high, and that's why the stock has declined so much. If you look at a chart, if I can bring up a chart, my computer still doesn't want to reboot, so I'm on my iPad, so it's a little slower here, but it has declined from about $10 a share back in 2015 down to $5. And anything down in the $5 range, and it has a decent amount of debt, you have to start thinking about bankruptcy. Now, I'm not saying it's coming to go bankrupt, but when in bankruptcy, who gets paid first? Well, bondholders get paid. Certainly, they're first in line. And then you have preferred shareholders, and you are a preferred shareholder, okay? Now, that means that it is higher risk than your bond holding, if you were holding the bond, but it's certainly lower risk than the overall equity. Now, the price of your preferred shares have not moved much, but I do worry about the fact that the common equity is down this low. They do have a pretty hefty debt level. They're in a cyclical industry. So if you don't want high risk, I mean, high risk is a relative term. What is high risk? What does that even mean? And in reality, this is probably above average risk for a preferred share. So I would get out of it. I would move on to something else because it sounds like you're more conservative. And because of the risk in the common equity, you're increasing the risk on the preferreds as well. Now you're listening to InvestTalk. We have just a few moments remaining in the hour, but there's still time for you. You can reach me now with your question at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Locke in San Jose. How you doing, Locke?
Good, and you?
I'm doing well. What can I do for you?
Yeah, my question is on Caterpillar, symbol C-A-T. Okay. I'd like to know, should I buy more, should I hold or sell?
I would certainly cut back my position. I definitely think it's overvalued at these levels. It's certainly turned around its revenue and earnings growth, and that's why you've seen such a rally from 52-week low. Actually, go back in 2016, we're talking in the 50s, right? And now we're at $137 a share, $81 billion market cap, 2.3% dividend yield. Operating earnings yield is only about 2.4%. So while the earning or business has improved some, we're still not at great values. I don't think it has justified this rally in the market. And if you look at the reason it fell so much, right? Its stock price struggled for about 5 years or so, from 2010-ish to 2015, is because operating earnings fell dramatically. From about $10 billion in December 2013 to a low of about less than $6 billion, so down 40%. And that's starting to recover. Now we're at about almost $7 billion, but we're nowhere near where we were back in 2014. So things are turning around some, and the growth looks great, but I don't think this growth rate is sustainable really for the longer term. So I think it's extremely overvalued at these levels, And we're at an all-time high in price, but we're nowhere near an all-time high when it comes to profitability on this name. So I would definitely sell half your position here and have a trailing stop on the rest.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sound good? No problem. Thanks for the call, Locke. 8899-CHART, 8899-2-4278. That's how you get through and ask. I think we have, what, 3 minutes left? Do we have a caller, or are we going to go to a talking point? Talking point, all right. All right, let's talk a little about three hard decisions about aging you must make before someone has to do it for you. No one wants to get to a point where they are not making their own decisions about their life. It's a terrible place to be. And so there's three kind of milestones you have to consider. First is decision to stop driving. And AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety says that drivers in their 50s and 60s have one of the lowest crash rates of any age. But this starts to rise after your late 60s and early 70s and increase more rapidly after 75. So odds are after 75, you should start thinking about, before you turn 75, you should start thinking about what would make you stop driving. What things could happen? Is it getting into a certain amount of accidents, certain type of accident, getting a certain amount of tickets? Maybe it's family members telling you that you need to stop driving, because I see this a lot. I've seen this with family members that they should stop driving, but none of the other family members want to tell them they shouldn't be driving, and it's a bad thing. And in today's world, with Uber and Lyft and maybe local bus or rail system, it's easier than ever to maintain your freedom and flexibility of your lifestyle without giving up driving. It's a lot easier nowadays. So make sure you plan that in advance. Number two is decision to stay in your home. It can be expensive as you get older, around the clock care. If you have long term care insurance, it can still be very, very expensive. So assisted living facilities tend to be a lot cheaper. And you might have some more sociability and activities. A lot of times it doesn't sound great, but for the right one, it can make a world of difference in your later stages of life. And to me, I've seen them. They're kind of like dorms for the elderly, and it can be a good thing. Not for everybody, but can be. And then lastly, who's going to take care of you? Once you can't, use the bathroom yourself, shower yourself, who's going to take care of you? You definitely want to plan for that as well. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, Steve is up in San Jose today for individual retirement portfolio reviews, but no matter where you live, you can hook up with him via telephone or Skype or FaceTime. To reserve your hour, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Glad you could be with us. On behalf of Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, I want to thank you for being part of the program. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.